Alaskans, we're still dealing with a pandemic. Longer nights and seasonal affective disorder don't make it any easier. We encourage you to take care of both your mental and physical health this winter. Get outside. Enjoy traditional foods. Connect with your community. And keep your body moving. Let's take care of ourselves and each other.
Welcome to Native America Calling. I'm Alyssa Yakyadi London. Continued struggles with COVID-19, reverberations from disturbing revelations about Native residential schools, and new strengths in the political arena. Those are some of the highlights that stand out in 2020 from a Native perspective. Coming up this hour, we'll reflect on the progress and hurdles from this past year. What are the things that mattered to you in 2020? Did things change for the better? We want to hear from you, coming up right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Art Hughes, in for Antonio Gonzalez. The governor of Oklahoma says he will not renew long-standing hunting and fishing compacts with the Cherokee and Choctaw Nations. In response, the tribes say they will expand hunting rights for their citizens and eliminate the requirement for state licenses. KFOR-TV reports the compacts have been in place since 2016 and provide a steep license discount for tribal members. In exchange, the news outlet reports the tribes pay a combined $38 million a year to the state. Cherokee Principal Chief Chuck Hoskins calls the decision by Governor Kevin Stitt tremendously disappointing. Hoskins says it's an attack on tribal sovereignty and is in keeping with Stitt's efforts to undermine collaboration between tribes and the state. The Oklahoman reports leaders from both Cherokee and Choctaw say they will expand hunting and fishing to a larger area of tribal trust land and tribally owned land starting January 1st for all tribal citizens with no need for a state license. Community members in Gallup, New Mexico, say they are worried about the future of medical services at Rehoboth McKinley County Hospital. A majority of the patients at RMCH are Native. KGLP's Rachel Cobb reports.
Community members gathered to share their concerns about a nonprofit hospital in Gallup, New Mexico. At RMCH, about 70% of patients are Native. Among the problems endangering hospital services are a lack of trust in hospital administration, a low quality rating, a $9.4 million deficit, and staff leaving.
I'm Caleb Lauber, and I was terminated from RMCH, the only Navajo-speaking physician there. I had a number of Navajo-speaking patients that no longer had a physician. This is not lost, I want you to know. We have to become a collective group of individuals and speak out.
More staff have left voluntarily.
My name is Beatrice Nunez. I have been at Red Rock Clinic for the last year in the OBGYN department. My vacancy has not been filled. Procedures that can only be provided by an RN will have to be provided in the labor and delivery department. At this time, there are only 4 available rooms, so it is probable that patients will have to travel to other hospitals for their procedures that can be easily and efficiently provided in the clinic.
Patients, plus present and former RMCH staff, are encouraged to share their concerns with McKinley County management, since the county owns the hospital building. For National Native News, this is Rachel Cobb in Gallup, New Mexico.
Nevada officials are promising support and commitment to uncover the full truth about boarding schools in that state. The Nevada Independent reports Governor Steve Sisolak offered a formal apology to tribes for what he calls an abhorrent policy that resulted in long-lasting trauma. He says elected leaders need to make amends. The comments came after Sisolak met with tribal representatives at the former Stewart Indian School in Carson City that saw some 20,000 Native students during its 90 years in operation. The records from that time are in the hands of federal officials. The building is now a museum and a law enforcement academy. The governor promised to aid the investigations into boarding schools demanded by Interior Secretary Deborah Holland. Sisolak says the investigation involves searching for and identifying any human remains on the campus. The Minnesota-based Bush Foundation is awarding a $50 million grant to the NDN Collective. The foundation issued a statement saying the collective has the trust and respect of the communities they serve. Collective President and CEO Nick Tilson issued a statement saying the grant is an opportunity to begin to indigenize and redefine the meaning of wealth. The organization says it will start a comprehensive planning and design process next month that will take input from community partners. They say they intend to begin redistributing the money through grants by late 2022. With National Native News, I'm Art Hughes.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
There are now booster recommendations for all three available COVID-19 vaccines in the United States, and you may choose which booster shot you receive. More info at aaip.org or cdc.gov/coronavirus, who support this show.
Support by the Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center, dedicated to cancer research, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous population. A no-charge online risk assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling, and I'm Alyssa London. Before we begin today's look back of 2021, let's check in with KNBA News Director Trip Krause, who's keeping up with the Alaska Federation of Natives annual conference. Trip, what are the highlights of the event so far?
Well, yesterday we heard from Alaska's seated congressional delegates, the Alaska Supreme Court Justice, and we also got a little bit of an update on the CARES Act and the deadline, as well as infrastructure spending.
So given that today is the final day of the virtual convention, what's left to be done?
This is a pretty big day. The first day usually sets up the second. We're going to hear from Department of Interior Secretary Deb Haaland. We'll hear a little bit more about the census and how it affects redistricting, but also voting rights and ranked choice voting here in Alaska, as well as some ballot initiatives that are on the ballot this year.
So after AFN is done, what is the follow-up that will need to take place?
The really big one is going to be the CARES Act deadline. Because of the lawsuit that went all the way to the Supreme Court, Alaska Native corporations, even though the CARES Act was signed in 2020, the lawsuit basically prevented the distribution for Alaska Native corporations. And so many ANCs haven't gotten their money until August, and there are still about 20 village corporations that still haven't gotten their money. There's also going to be the redistricting here in the state. As you know, the census is a big part of what plays into drawing legislative boundaries. And in the here in Alaska, we have two Alaska Natives who are on the redistricting board. And so their input is really helpful, but there's still some complications with, you know, some boundaries are really weird and they split streets and neighborhoods and things like that. So that's another part of it. And then the other is going to be the spending of the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. As we know, it was passed in 2021. And we're looking at probably January when that we really start to see that spending happen.
So that was KNBA News Director Trip Krause. Thank you so much, Trip.
Thank you so much.
So given that this show is a 2021 wrap-up, we start with looking back at the accomplishments of our first Native American Secretary of the Interior, Deb Haaland, who is the head of the Department of Interior. She has launched an investigation into the atrocities at our country's residential schools and has been driven to replace offensive place names. And she's also been trailblazing in making history as the first Native cabinet secretary in our country's history. And there are some of the highlights. These are just some of the highlights in the past year from a Native perspective. And while we are currently enjoying an NFL season without the former name of the Washington, D.C. team, we endured the Atlanta baseball team's fans chanting while they call the tomahawk chop during the World Series. And as always, there was several offensive comments and events at the political and educational fronts, but there is a lot of work being done by Illuminatives to change all of this. So we'll talk about all of that today, and we want to hear from you. What stands out to you from this past year in terms of Indian Country news? Give us a call at 1-800-996-2848. That's 1-800-99-NATIVE. Now, our first guest is Lashay Wesley. She is the Rapid Response Campaign Manager for Illuminatives, and she is a citizen of the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma. And I was so deep in conversation with our KNBA news director, Tripp, that I didn't see the show note that from our producer that you weren't actually able to hear him. So I don't know how they've fixed it on their end, but I hope we've been able to move on from that, and I apologize for that technical issue. So just to get started, though, with Lashay, welcome to Native America Calling.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. For those who don't know, can you share with us about Illuminatives?
Yeah, absolutely. Illuminative is a woman-led, Native-led nonprofit organization. We work in social justice and mainly focus on correcting the false narratives that are out there about Native people. We make sure that Native people are accurately and well represented in pop culture and in media.
Thank you. And what are some of the things that you're most proud of from this last year in terms of the accomplishments of Illuminatives in media and television and beyond?
Yeah, it's been an amazing year. There are so many things that we can just take time to reflect back on, from the major accomplishments that have taken place in Hollywood, as well as the various conversations about Native American mascots, ultimately the Guardians revealing their brand new name, and also some just major steps forward with schools and school districts across the country. Those are the big kind of things that stick out in my mind.
So can you speak more about the gains when it comes to Native sports mascots? I know that you mentioned Cleveland Guardians and Washington, D.C. football team changed their name. So what does it mean for Native representation in sports and in the national conversation?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the one thing that we all saw, and you discussed this earlier, is the Atlanta Braves playing in the World Series this year. And I think all of us were upset to see the tomahawk chop, see the Native imagery that the team is still using. The fact that that happened on broadcast TV in the middle of the World Series, you know, a huge game in sports world that gets international attention. That was very upsetting to see. But I think what we really notice is kind of a shift in Americans' understandings of the mask issue, of the mascot issue. We saw journalists and sports reporters, they were really holding the MLB and the franchise accountable for continuing to use the tomahawk chop. I think a lot of people agree now that this is unacceptable. And I think that that bad press had a real big impact on the Braves. And I think ultimately they will see that this is a change that needs to take place. I think there has been big successes this year with the Cleveland Guardians announcing their new name, branding. It was very exciting, kind of demonstrated how the franchise can move forward in a positive and exciting way.
So as someone that doesn't work with Illuminatives closely, all that I see going on that is making the changes is these amazing graphics on your Instagram and these social media campaigns that you execute so well. So I know there's so much that's happening behind the scenes. Can you share with our listeners some of the other ways beyond what I just described that Illuminatives helps move the needle in terms of making sure that in sports, Native people are better represented and slurs are not used?
Yeah, I think a lot of the work that we do is education. And I think people are learning more and more about the psychological research that is out there that shows that mascots actually harm young people. And I think that's the biggest thing that we do a lot behind the scenes is educate people about that research, you know, that shows that students face discrimination as a result of these native mascots. It lowers self-esteem, increases rate of depression, you know, very serious and harmful consequences for our young people. So I think we do a lot of work to educate people about that, and we do a lot of loud work, which is calling out these companies and these franchises that continue to hold these mascots and that have native imagery.
Our producer says that the last time you were on the show, you were talking about Rick Santorum's comments about America being built from nothing. What has developed on that issue?
Well, it's very exciting that Rick Santorum was let go, you know, that he's no longer on CNN. I think we had a very good conversation and support from the Native community and many different organizations and leaders talking about how news organizations, CNN, need to do a better job of educating staff about Native issues, about Indian law, and make sure that Native people are represented in the newsroom.
Speaking of representation in the newsroom, can you speak to the progress in Hollywood and media and news when it comes to Native representation?
Yeah, I think that's where it's been in a really exciting and thrilling year. You know, there were two amazing shows that premiered this year. Rutherford Falls, it premiered in April on Peacock TV. It was created by a Navajo woman, Sierra Teller Ornelas. It starred Janice Schmieding, also Michael Gray Eyes. They're in the process of filming season two, so it's obviously a success. It's moving on to season two. And most recently, Reservation Dogs, which premiered in August. It airs on FX on Hulu. It had an all-Native writers' room. It has renewed for a second season. It's even received award nominations from the Golden Globes, Critics' Choice, and it's a huge success with critics, which is really exciting to see. And I think these two shows are very different, and I think that can show kind of the depth of stories that are out there. And I think it is so important that Native people are both in front and behind the camera, and also Native people are crafting our own stories.
Thank you, Lachey. Well, we're going to talk with you more after the break. For now, this is Native America Calling. We'd love to hear from you today. You can call in at 1-800-996-2848. You can also reach out on Facebook at Native America Calling or on Twitter at 1-800-99-NATIVE, and we'll get your comments on the air. You can also interact with us on Instagram and Facebook at Native America Calling and tag me, Alyssa K. London. We have to take a short break, but we'll be right back. Native Americans' family bond is a strong cultural tradition. It's no wonder Native people have a high rate of family caregiving for elders and others. But those who care for others don't have to do it by themselves. And on the next Native America Calling, we'll hear about resources from tribes and organizations to help caregivers.
A yela nu dana dega guta lerdi. Egine la ostana wardi. Hadado huela gi aletige usi danela kohi iga. Witatla no heti in yoya a yela nu dana dega an excess diski. Naski yiged stela at healthcare.gov a 1-800-318-2596. He are gets Medicare a Medicaid una dashka I.
You're listening to Native America Calling, and I'm Alyssa London. We're getting the Native perspective looking back on the year that was 2021. It was the year of Interior Secretary Deb Haaland. It was also the year of the Cleveland Guardians and some victories and setbacks on the environmental front. And we'll hear about those in just a moment. We'll also want to hear from you. Join our discussion by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Now, before the break, we were speaking with Lachey Wesley, the Rapid Response Campaign Manager with Illuminatives. And now I want to bring into the conversation Dallas Goldtooth. He is with Keep It in the Ground, as a campaign organizer for the Indigenous Environmental Network. He's also an actor and a comedian and a part of Res Dogs, which I'm pretty sure made him even more famous all across Indian country. So, Dallas, nice to meet you. Welcome to Native America Calling.
Aho! Happy to be here.
Thank you. So, to start us off, tell us about your work with Indigenous Environmental Network.
Yeah, Indigenous Environmental Network is an international organization that works with frontline Native communities who are fighting to protect Mother Earth. And I specifically have been working for over this past year, helping support a lot of communities who have been fighting different forms of fossil fuel development, whether it's oil drills, whether it's pipelines or even export terminals, like the whole lifeline of oil and gas. That's what we've been fighting on for a while now.
It's important to fight that. So given that there's pipelines across Native lands, across Indian country, it's a pervasive issue. Can you give us a rundown on some of the notable pipelines that you focused on this year with your organization?
Yeah. So the big ones that we've been really supporting, a lot of these frontline groups are, you know, there's the Keystone XL pipeline, which we had a significant win. I mean, that was over a decade that communities put into fighting that project, and we were able to stop that in its tracks. But we also have had, you know, there was the Line 3 fight, which really got heated up over the summer and this whole past number of years. People have been fighting that project. There's Line 5, which is over in Anishinaabe territory in northern Michigan. There is the MVP pipeline. It's specifically an extension of that goes into Native territories in North Carolina and Virginia. There's a Jordan Cove pipeline up in southern Oregon. So there was a lot of projects that were on our radar that we've been fighting against, including, you know, a lot of fracking development at the source, whether that's in the Four Corners region down in Chaco Canyon or up on the North Slope of Alaska and the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge.
Well, that one's closer to me up here in Anchorage, so I've been hearing about that one. I mean, that is a lot of projects that you're fighting against. How do you move the needle? How does your organization kind of feel looking back over the year about the impact that you made?
Well, it really comes down to grassroots organizing. It's, you know, the success is in the hands of those on the ground who have the closest relationship to the land itself. And we would not have moved any needles. We would not have had any wins if it wasn't for Indigenous peoples on the front lines in these communities standing up in defense of Mother Earth and taking risks. And there are risks. I mean, we've seen an escalation of state-sanctioned violence, the usage of police. We've seen the escalation of just random people who are attacking land defenders just for asserting their rights to live on their own land, on our land. So it is very much due to that the work of all those folks that we were able to win on Keystone XL. We were able to get a win on the Mountain Valley Pipeline, Southgate Extension, Jordan Cove. The win against that would not have happened if it wasn't for Native folks in Southern Oregon standing up. So really, you know, we are making an impact. Our organization this year released a first ever report of its kind called the Indigenous Resistance Against Carbon Report. And it just details how, because of Indigenous resistance, we have been able to stop over a quarter of oil and gas development in the United States and Canada. So over 25% of greenhouse gas emissions of the U.S. and Canada has been stopped or delayed because of Indigenous resistance. And that's pretty amazing to see. You know, there's a lot of work. There's a lot of fights still happening. It's not over. We're pretty disappointed with this administration and how it's handling fossil fuel development and climate change. but it's really going to be, we're really going to move the dial because of our folks on the ground.
Disappointed with this administration, even with a Native Secretary of the Interior. Can you expand on that comment?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, this is our opinion, or my opinion, that, you know, it was very much a historic and significant moment to have Deb Haaland in the position as Secretary of the Department of Interior. We supported that and supported her in getting to that level, and had worked with her before she got into office or got into that position to protect the land. But it can't all be on her. Like, the thing is that she's still very much a part of a system that is predicated upon the oppression of many people for the benefit of a few. And so I don't hold her accountable personally for any of that. But the agency itself, the Department of Interior, is still, we are still seeing widespread destruction of the land and the extraction of fossil fuels, even though the science says we got to do the opposite. So, you know, I am very much disappointed. Our organization is very disappointed in this administration, and we celebrate with hesitancy because of it. Look, the Biden administration has approved more fracking permits at a greater rate than Trump did in his administration. The Biden administration, one a week after the United Nations Climate Summit, auctioned off the largest auction of public land to fossil fuels in history. And, you know, the administration says, oh, we had to because the courts said we had to. Well, that's a complete lie, because in that lawsuit, the U.S. government said, actually, no, we don't have to follow any court order. We don't have to sell off this land, but they did anyway. So that there's my concern is that for every, you know, every little snack that we get from the administration behind the scenes, that there's still inaction happening to truly address climate change.
So when most people think of Native people advocating against things like Keystone Pipeline, they think of what was really publicized in the media, which was a very contentious showdown between police and Indigenous people that were camping out and making a standoff. I'm pretty sure that's not normally what it looks like. So can you give us an insight into some of the ways that you are fighting against the nodal pipelines that you listed out a few moments ago?
Yeah, you know, it really is, you know, community organizing that really is making the most impact here. What I mean by that is folks within the communities with support from folks outside of those communities, like bringing people together, talking about what the land means to them, talking about what's important for the future of all life, and then bringing new folks into that. You know, Keystone XL, that pipeline fight would not have been successful if we didn't get Native folks and non-Native folks. I mean, I was having meals and dinners with hardcore, like, right-wing Republicans in Western North Nebraska, talking about treaty rights, talking about the, like, connecting on making relationship around how much the land means to both of our communities. And because of that work, you had right-wing Republicans. Like, these are straight ranchers way in the middle of South Dakota and North Dakota, Nebraska, who after months of work and communication, they were like, yeah, we stand against this pipeline, and we need to recognize treaty rights. So that's really where it's about. It's like, it's not a matter of, like, how are we talking to the folks who are already on our side, but how are we pulling in new people? And so I'm seeing communities do that more and more to build power, and we need to continue to do that.
That's what you mean by grassroots. It's not just lobbying people in D.C. You're literally saying you're knocking on doors and having meals with folks.
Absolutely. It's also like, we're, as Indian country, I think we've gotten so used to seeing, like, hardcore actions, right, on Facebook Live and video. You see people, like, you know, pushing back against police, and you see all this, like, escalated action. Well, what you're seeing is just a simple one tactic of a greater strategy, you know, that there's other strategies being employed, there's other tactics being used to really move the dial, and so everybody has a part to play in it. So it's okay for folks to say, well, I don't really feel comfortable doing a protest out in the streets. that's fine. There's other roles for people to play in order to make the future more sustainable for the next seven generations.
What would you say conversation-wise has been most effective to help people understand the Native point of view when it comes to environmental issues and preservation? Pretty sure you have a lot of experience talking to folks. So you probably have some good insight into that.
I would say one is, look, we all benefit. Every single person on Turtle Island benefits from when Indigenous rights are recognized and upheld. When our right to free prior and informed consent is recognized, we all benefit. And I mean that by, like, our society is better and healthier. It means that we've shown that Indigenous rights and Indigenous communities can protect the land far better than colonizers can. And so we are all beneficiaries of Indigenous rights. It's not just us as Native peoples. And when people start recognizing that, we move the needle in a good way.
Can you share with me about your organization's work on the preservation of Chaco Canyon?
Yeah, we've been so fortunate to really support a lot of groups who have been fighting that. I want to recognize Dene Care, Public Action Alliance, the Greater Chaco Canyon Coalition, there's a lot of groups within that coalition who have been putting in so much work. There's the Pueblo Leaders Council, I apologize for forgetting the name, as well as like the local chapter leaders in the Chaco Canyon region who have been advocating, who have been knocking on doors, taking meetings with local national leaders and state leaders, really advocating for the protection of that. And it's really paid off where, you know, the Biden administration has put a 20-year ban on, you know, any kind of oil development within 10 miles of Chaco Canyon. That's huge. We got to celebrate that. That would not have happened if it wasn't for all those people and all those leaders stepping up. But all we're saying is, okay, what's next? How are we going to protect the greater region against fossil fuel development? How are we going to take it to the next level? And so we're always looking ahead to the next effort.
That is a great win. Good job. Here's a perspective. So economic development in Indian country helps with preserving our sovereignty. And some tribes are also then sometimes sacrificing their lands and some of their environmental interests in order to to further their economic development interests. Any thoughts on that? Something that happens.
You know, it's a great question that I encounter all of the time. And you can't answer that question without taking a systemic perspective. They're stepping back and look, we are lived within a colonized system. And as such, that colonized system, the colonizer system, forces our leaders to make decisions between one bad choice with another bad choice. And what we are advocating for is a phrase called a just transition, that we want to transition ourselves to a better, a more sustainable future. We want to do it in a manner that's just. And as such, we need to be able to have choices for ourselves about what that future looks like that's more sustainable. And we don't have those choices. And a lot of communities, all they have is like, hey, all we have is oil and gas. And that's all we can do to make money. Hey, those are legitimate reasons. You want to make sure your people can feed themselves. You want to make sure that your people can heat themselves in the winters. But in the long run, you're making a decision that's already been set up by outside society. The colonizers have already established that. And so I advocate for us, as we really want to talk about decolonizing and self-determination, then we have to really break our ties with this ideology that we have to stick to the status quo. And the status quo is killing Mother Earth. And I am one, and this may offend some people, but I really believe that by aligning yourselves with the interests of fossil fuels, is going against the interests of your grandchildren and great-grandchildren. And even though we make a decision, say this is our decision as a sovereign nation, the world is not going to be sustainable 100 years from now. So what are we going to do to make sure we turn it around?
Yeah, this is our only home, and we, as Native people, look to seven generations at least going forward, and that is not something that is necessarily an aspect of typical capitalism to think about several generations ahead. It's usually about how to get the gains at the moment. So progress-wise, what are you looking forward to in 2022?
Oh, I'm looking forward to a whole bunch of stuff. I'm looking forward to people continuing to build power. I'm looking to the investment within our communities. Like, there's a lot of resources now making their way into Indian country, and I think we're in a tremendous place where a lot of our communities don't have to think that they have to deal with pennies. There's actually more resources coming in so that we can accomplish the dreams we want. So I really look forward to that. I look forward to the next big fight, in my opinion, is free prior informed consent, to make that normalized language. I look forward to us forcing the Biden administration to start using that language, you know, forcing them, meaning that we have give them no option but to recognize indigenous rights and our right to consent. So those are things I really, really do look forward to, as well as, you know, all the Native representation in media. I think we're in a really great place right now to continue to grow out and build power.
Yes, I'm going to have to ask you about reservation dogs after the break and also get Lachey's perspective on that as well. But I hope you enjoyed a segment where we just talked about your work in terms of Native environmental issues. That must have been a change of pace.
It's all a change of pace all the time. Hey, that's how many of us live our lives. We're juggling a lot.
Definitely. Well, thank you, Dallas. So for our audience, we're going to go to break. This is Native America Calling. We'd love to hear from you today. Be sure to call in at 1-800-996-2848. And you can also reach out on Facebook at Native America Calling or on Twitter at 1-800-99-NATIVE, and we'll get your comments on the air. And you can interact with us on Instagram and Facebook at Native America Calling, and also with me, Alyssa K. London. We have to take a short break, but we'll be right back.
Mesa Lands Community College can help you lead the way in your chosen field. At Mesa Lands, where 1 in 3 students is Native American, you get hands-on opportunities working one-on-one with instructors in wind energy, where students go up the turbine in their first semester, silversmithing with access to the largest foundry in the Southwest, and blacksmithing in the cowboy arts. Mesa Lands has a national top 10 rodeo team, too. Info and applications at mesalands.edu. Mesa Lands Community College supports this program.
This is Native America Calling, and I'm Alyssa London. We're getting the Native perspective on 2021, politics, education, economic development, entertainment. What stands out to you? The number to get in on the discussion is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Now, on the call with us today, we have Dallas Goldtooth. He is the Keep It in the Ground campaign organizer for the Indigenous Environmental Network. He is Diné and Dakota. And we also have Lachey Wesley. She's the Rapid Response Campaign Manager with Illuminatives and a member of the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma. We're also going to bring in Dr. Erin Payment, chairperson for the Sault Ste. Marie Tribe of Chippewa Indians and the first vice president of the National Congress of American Indians. But first, I want to finish this thought that we started before the break about reservation dogs. So, Dallas, what was that like, and what does that mean for Indian country?
What was it like being a half-naked Indian on horseback on camera?
Well, and probably one of the funniest moments in media this year. Yes. Thank you for that.
Yeah. No, you're welcome. I'm super proud of Sterling Hargill, good brother of mine. I'm proud of the writers team, the creative team behind it, the producers. Like, that experience really was humbling for me because it was just awe-inspiring. You have Native folks in front of the camera acting. You have Native folks behind the camera writing it and directing it, producing it, holding the cameras, and so on and so forth. So it is a really true historic moment that I'm just happy to be a part of. And you know, the show is racking up a lot of awards right now, and I really do hope that I do expect this to open up a lot of doors for other Native creators and storytellers to really find a moment to tell their story.
It was really, really well done and an awesome moment for Indian Country. So thank you for all your work on that. And with thank you to the rest of the team as well. Lachey, any thoughts on Res Dogs and what it did for Native representation in Hollywood?
I mean, I just every day I think we're learning and sharing on our Slack message all the accolades that Reservation Dogs is piling up. I think it is so exciting to just see critics, viewers, all kinds of people just really watching the show and enjoying it. And I'm so excited to see, you know, what's coming in the next seasons, and just so thankful that this show is getting so much attention.
And you're optimistic for a lot more Native shows in the future, thanks to some of the success of Reservation Dogs?
Oh, absolutely. I think that it will be a major stepping stone for a lot of up-and-coming producers, directors, storytellers, actors, everybody. I think the Hollywood is really seeing the amount of Native talent that's out there, and I think that they're recognizing that people want these kinds of stories.
Yes, it was a great demonstration of the unique sense of humor in Indian Country. I'm sure it can speak for all of Indian Country, and that it was definitely one of the highlights of 2021. Now, I want to bring into the conversation Dr. Aaron Payment. Chairman Payment, welcome to Native America Calling.
Hello, can you hear me?
Can hear you loud and clear. Thank you for joining us today.
Awesome. It's so cool to come after Dallas. I met him at a paddle out protest. There's a pipeline in connecting the peninsulas in Michigan. And when I first met him, I thought he was crazy. But then I realized how funny he was, and I didn't know he was famous, but now I know, and go back and Google some of the stuff he's done before. He's brilliant.
Yes, he's pretty famous, and I'm sure he uses humor in his grassroots organizing to help people understand Indigenous environmental issues. Right, Dallas?
As much as I can. Half the time I'm embarrassing myself, but thank you, Aaron. It was a pleasure being up there in your territories.
Wonderful. So, Chairman Payment, can you speak to your perspective on how it's been going with Deb Holland as the head of the Department of Interior since March? How do you think she's made her mark in that time?
Yes, absolutely. So there's the last two times that I was on your show, one was during the transition. Actually, we were watching really closely. It was the day after the election and watching, you know, the numbers, and I was doing my little calculations, and I called it right. But then Indian Country all rallied behind the concept of having our first American Indian cabinet member. And it really was a grassroots effort to make sure that the Biden administration coming in followed through on their promises. And that level of a commitment was the very first step. The consultation policy actually was the first step, because that happened the day after he was sworn in. But certainly picking an American Indian to be a cabinet member for the first time. And then just to say how proud we are of Deborah. You know, she says often that she stands on the shoulders of her ancestors, but I often follow that up with that we're standing right with her, shoulder to shoulder, and we empower her in the strength of Indian Country. One of the very first things that she did right out of the gate was to call for the investigation. We know how important reconciling the boarding school issue and our missing children. I say that our kids that were taken from us are the first murdered and missing Indigenous people. And she very bravely said, we're going to conduct this investigation. We have a timeline. We're going to get to this information. And that was a very brave thing. She could have coasted in and, you know, rested on her laurels, but she challenged and, you know, trained for her marathon, and then also came right directly after this. And so we're so pleased, and we look forward to the strength that she's going to bring to representing us at the highest levels.
How is NCI advocating for more reconciliation work alongside Deb Holland, Secretary Holland?
Yeah, Yeah, so, you know, she established, and there were three consultations that happened with Indian Country. I attended all of them. I attended them because I'm a researcher and I want to see what people are having to say. There were lots of tears, a lot of pain, a lot of opinions, and a lot of different views of culturally what we need to do with people that were left behind. Brian Newland, who I'm very proud of, he's from my community, my neighborhood. He's a member of the Bay Mills Indian Tribe. That's our brother-sister tribe. He's the person who's been facilitating these sessions. Just these three meetings that were about 4 hours each has really pulled together, I think, the biggest compendium of information about what needs to happen, the connection between the boarding schools and historical and intergenerational trauma, the worst of the worst outcomes as a result of that. So a lot really rests on this reconciliation, both in terms of a full accounting of those family members that are still missing, the families that have suffered for centuries, not knowing what happened to their loved one, getting right to the bottom of that, and then repatriating where it's appropriate. Some tribes have said that they would rather have a ceremony and leave the remains where they are. And so they've been very respectful and deferential to Indian Country in taking our input, and I just couldn't be happier with the way they're handling it.
Thank you. And now we also know that the new National Park Services Director is Charles Sams III, a member of the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation. So what do you think this could mean for tribes' access and stewardship of those lands?
I know that in Michigan we have a permanent settlement of our treaty rights, and we get free access to all public parks. So I'm looking forward to free access to all public parks across the country. No, I don't think that's going to happen. But, you know, another big step that Secretary Holland did was to put out changing the names of any derogatory parks that are under federal purview, like the S word. So I think, you know, it's a balancing act because we're positioned in interior. And so, you know, natural resources and Indians are managed under the Department of Interior, which is a little offensive. But I think that a more balanced approach in recognizing the natural resources in this country that originate from Indian Country, I think we're going to see some more of that. I think we might see some indigenous history that will be incorporated, some accurate history that will be incorporated, and recognizing those areas where there were battles and areas that are sacred ground. So I see a lot of that coming. You know, we're seeing this evolution of environmental policy with this administration, and it's moving quickly. You talked earlier about Chaco Canyon, Keystone Pipeline. We've got some expectations for the administration, and in fact, the Michigan tribes, all 12, are meeting with the State Department today. Canada invoked a treaty and trying to basically trump us out of the equation. But our treaties predate the existence of the Canadian government. And so we're going to give them our all today during the State Department meeting to let them realize they should not leave us out of the equation.
Chairperson Payment, Dallas mentioned that with his organization, they're not necessarily happy with the Biden administration's handle of environmental issues. Do you have a different perspective?
No, I don't. I think it's the same. So I serve on the ad hoc 30 by 30 committee, and you know we're pushing, and it you know there's other really really big issues. Let me back up and say that I don't disagree with Dallas's take on it. But I also have more of a longer-term sort of perspective. The president's balancing out trying to get these Rescue Act dollars out. I think that's really critically important. I think that if there's any chance that the Democrats are going to retain the House and the Senate, that he has to have something to show for it. So I think he's trying to pick the low-hanging fruit. I think Senator Manchin is a wolf in sheep's clothing that's standing in the way, and that's really unfortunate. You know, we're starting to see some formulation of federal Indian policy that's respectful of our natural resources, our sacred sites, treaty rights, and natural resources. And we need to see more of that. I think it's time for the administration and all of the different agencies to put their stamp on things and forge ahead. I do understand there's some inertia happening from some of the bureaucrats and careerists that are slowing the process down. But I do agree with Dallas in saying that we need to see a lot more, a lot sooner.
So you mentioned, though, that for the Democrats to maintain their position of power, they need to make sure that certain things go through, and a lot of that has to do with COVID. So we saw a lot of money go to tribal nations this year in terms of COVID relief funds. So how significant is that? Will things change because of that? How is that being utilized from your perspective?
Yeah, so, you know, I was juggling today, and I was on a consultation with IHS, and I left a little bit early to come here, and then I'm going to head back there. You know, so I always call it glows and grows. So I'm an educator, and I do want to give credit where credit is due, but also that shouldn't mean that we just have to be blissfully ignorant and just rubber stamp, you know, and say we're happy with everything. We do have a record amount of money that has come out of the federal government in this administration under Rescue Act dollars. We do have proposed increases, up to 30% increases for Indian Health Service. We have a commitment for advanced appropriations and also forward funding and mandatory funding in some areas. But it's not enough. I will be the first to say it's not enough. We got a $2.5 billion increase in our annual IHS proposed budget, but we fall short by at least another $30 billion. And so $2.5 billion more, we're still about $30 billion short. So we have to, you know, keep our feet to the fire and remind the federal government that, you know, during the campaign, they pledged to be able to get us caught up. And so we are grateful for the record amount of money that has come to us, but we're not satisfied because we prepaid with the blood, sweat, and tears and over 500 million acres of land. So it's not reparations. It's not because of the poor Indians, although we are some of the poorest of the poor under the Broken Promises Report, but it's because the federal government has a mortgage that's due.
$30 billion that... not enough budget going to Indian Health Service. Do you think that reservation dogs then hit the nail on the head in terms of showing some of the shortcomings of the Indian Health Services?
Yes. And I absolutely love that show. And I think Dallas made a joke about being almost completely naked. That's got to be one of the funniest memes that I've ever seen. But it's fair. It's a fair criticism because we have the worst of the worst outcomes in the Broken Promises Report. And one other thing is, we've got our focus on getting full funding for IHS, but full funding for IHS means about $50 billion. We're at about $8.5 billion. But that's based on the service area. So there's a concept, artificial concept, called purchase and referred service area. And so for my tribe, we have about 47,000 members, and only 16,000 of us live in the purchase and referred service area. So they're the only people that count, according to the federal government. And I'm here to say that the other 30 million or thousand of us, of my tribal citizens, count as well, but they don't count when it comes to getting appropriations. And that's just one tribe. All tribes across the country, we don't get a penny for our members that don't live in our purchase and referred service area. And so the real need for Indian Health Service is probably, you know, multiples of that $50 billion. It's probably at least $100 billion. And, you know, just a couple years ago, we committed to our veterans' health by giving portability. It's time for us to be honest about the treaty and trust obligation that Indians deserve health care no matter where we live. And so we should fully fund, and that means our members no matter where they live. So I'm pushing for an Indian health care portability card.
So as we start to get to the end of our show, I want more time with all of you. Can you kind of round us out? If we look back at 2021 in Indian country, can you give us some final thoughts on some really big topics like infrastructure bills, ARPA emergency funds, and broadband from the federal government? Just some closing thoughts.
Yeah, just real quickly. So, you know, we did well in the ARPA. We did very well under infrastructure. We've got our fingers crossed on Build Back Better. It looks like there's another potentially $13 billion more. The total will be close to $60 billion. That is historic. But I also want to just send out a real clear message that President Biden and Vice President Harris are in office because of Indian country. The seven battleground states made the difference. We retained those states that we needed to retain, We picked up those states that we needed to pick up. And the population of American Indians in those respective states is multiples more than the margin of victory. And so the administration knows it. They met with us during the transition. They've committed to certain things, and we're keeping them honest, and we're going to keep reminding them that they're there because of us and that they have a duty to fulfill the treaty and trust responsibility. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson Payment. Well, that's all the time we have for today's show. I want to thank our guests, Chairperson Payment, Lashay Wesley, and Dallas Goldtooth. I'm back tomorrow, and we're going to talk about resources for caregivers. That's on tomorrow's Native America Calling. I'm your host, Alyssa London. Gunashish. Thank you.
With Christmas supplies and gifts in short supply, rest assured Prairie Edge and the Sioux Trading Post have you covered. Botanicals, craft supplies, beads, books, and music. We may not have it all, but we sure have a bunch at PrairieEdge.com who support this show. Wopila.
Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at RamonaFarms.com.
How mitakuyepiki? We chose on you wapi. Pejutawashe unkok upelo. Nitiwa hekiob och iguapole ampetuki. Lakhol wayaza awayanki otl yayo isamasola chihanta. Healthcare.gov LEIO Nishla Mas Apkayo 1-800-318-2596. Le Wot Khaniki, Medicare and Medicaid or Tieta Hiapelo. Oh, Hetchetuelo.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.